Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we begin the show today by concentrating on the onion. Why the heck do they make you cry? They're used in almost every culture. And on the show today, we'll take a deep dive into the history of the onion with our guest, New York Times bestselling author Mark Kurlansky. His new book is The Core of the Onion. The Core of the Onion. Subtitle is Peeling the Rarest Common Food, featuring more than 100 historical recipes. So, are you a fan of onions or maybe garlic or leeks? How do you like to use them? What would you like to know about the different varieties? Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Mark Kurlansky, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
My pleasure.
I loved your book. It was filled with great information, but it was also very entertaining and useful as well with the recipes. So I really enjoyed reading it.
Great. Thank you.
And you've written about so many different things, salt, milk, cod, salmon. Why did it take you so long to write about onions?
Oh, I don't know. It just really kind of came to me one day that the onion was underrated. That it was right in front of everybody, and nobody was giving it its due. And somebody ought to do that.
Well, I tell you what, you did a fine job of it. And I looked at your bibliography. Oh my goodness! You were citing so many things from history and so forth, going way back. And your bibliography is pretty large. That must have taken a lot of research and a variety of resources.
Yeah, it is a lot of research, and most of my books, I give extensive bibliographies because I want people to know where this stuff is coming from and places where they can go if they want to dig deeper.
Yeah. What surprised you the most when maybe doing your research?
I don't know what surprised me most. There were a lot of things that surprised me. The extent of folklore. Certain through patterns, such as people looking down on people who eat raw onions. I had never really thought about that. I'd never been particularly critical of eating raw onions, I think. One of the fantastic things about onions is that it has two personalities, the raw onion, which is very strong and aggressive, and the cooked onion. When heat is applied, it completely changes its chemical makeup and becomes sweet.
Yeah, and what is it about onions? Maybe you could describe what it is about onions that make us cry when we're cutting into them.
Yeah, I mean, that, of course, is one of the first things that, you know, struck me about what makes onions different from everything else. I mean, it's the only vegetable that if you attack it, it attacks back. And what it does is it releases this sulfurous gas that seeks out water or humidity and finds it in your eyes. And when it combines with the fluid in your eyes, it becomes sulfur dioxide, and that hurts.
It doesn't indeed, but you do talk about different ways that over the years people have tried to get rid of the crying while they're cutting it up, and
right.
I try to remember the best one or one that you thought would work pretty well.
Well, yes, yeah, some work and some don't work at all. The idea of cutting onions next to running water does have some science to it, because as I say, this gas seeks water to combine with. And so if you have this running water, it will divert, not all, but it'll divert some away from your eyes. One thing that I find works quite well, which seldom is brought up, is just wearing glasses. Doesn't completely solve the problem, because it can get to your eyes through your nose, mm-hmm. but it helps a lot. And there is also something called onion goggles. Some kitchens use onion goggles. You know, the problem there is that we live in an age when chefs are trying to be cool, and it's hard to look cool when you're wearing onion goggles.
Well, the chef would probably leave the cutting to one of the minions in the kitchen.
Exactly, yes.
Oh, man. Mark Kurlansky, our guest, his new book is called The Core of an Onion. Questions about onions, I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. You know, I never thought of an onion as an aphrodisiac, but apparently some have felt that way.
Well, yeah, it was inevitable because, you know, onions are thought of as everything. You know, they're supposed to cure colds. They cure baldness. I mean, there's just endless claims for onions, most of which aren't true. And so sooner or later, it was going to dawn on someone that it was an aphrodisiac. It actually, in certain religious cults, including the Catholic Church and Hindu and Buddhism, onions are kept away from holy days and holy people because they incite sex. And there was a famous medieval Arab book called The Perfumed Garden, which was about eroticism, and it told about the use of honey and onion juice as an aphrodisiac. I have to say, I haven't experimented with this very much.
And onions, by the way, onions go way back in your, I forget how many thousand years they go back, but they go back a long way.
Yeah, I mean, the first recipes, you know, the first recorded everything is Sumerian, because the Sumerians were the first to record. They were the first with a written language. And they wrote on clay tablets. And incredibly, scholars have learned to read their language. And some of the tablets have survived, and three tablets with recipes on them have survived. And they're all stews with onions.
And so it goes back at least that far, and probably a little further back than that.
Probably further. You know, that's the first that it was written. But we don't really know the origin of onions, because the wild, there are many wild onion plants around, but the wild onion that the cultivated onion descends from has vanished.
And
we can guess about where it was in the stands, but you know, we don't know exactly what the wild one was and what was added to it. You know, it's like if you want to understand dogs, you look at wolves, but there's no onion wolf left.
Well, we do know that onions were a staple in ancient Egypt.
Yes. And still are very important in Egypt, in the Nile Valley. And the Egyptians attached all kinds of importance to onions. The configuration of them, the layers, the concentric layers, were seen as a symbol of the universe, of the permanence of life. And they show up, and images of them show up in tombs. Onions were buried with mummies, and we're not sure if it was, some say it was because it's the symbol of life, and some say it was because the strength of the onion would stave off bad spirits and And some say that it helps to preserve the mummy.
Hmm. And I was interested in actually the use of, I think it was leeks, in battle.
Ah, the Welsh, yes.
Yeah, the Welsh, that was it.
Yeah. David, the patron saint of Wales, wore a leek into battle when he fought the Saxons to save Christianity. And it became very much a part of Welsh culture. You know, fans wear leeks to Welsh rugby matches. Although nowadays there's a preference for wearing daffodils rather than leeks. And there's a linguistic thing going on there in the Celtic language. But also, you know, people would rather wear a flower than an onion. Go figure.
Well, we have callers online with questions. Let's go to Carol in Eau Claire. Hi, Carol. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I do not have a question. I have a little short story. I'll try to make it quick. I had read years ago about way back in, like, you know, the late 1800s, there was a country doctor somewhere in the Midwest, and he found that one very bad flu season, he went to, you know, several families in his community, and he treated many, you know, quite a few people. And after he got through a couple of years of living there and doing this, he couldn't figure out why there were some families that never seemed to get sick. And so he tried really hard to start thinking about all the possibilities that would be. And then he went out to one of those people and was kind of looking around and talking to them. And he noticed that there was kind of a tall bag, or not bag, but a tall braid of onions, dried onions. And they said, oh, yeah, they did that every year, you know. And he started looking at the other homes that did not get so sick or get the flu at all.
And same thing.
Discovered that was the common denominator. So, I mean, take it for what it's worth, I guess, you know.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's actually a very old thing, that onions keep away disease. And they also keep away vampires, you know. I was recently talking to someone who had taken one of these tourist cruises on the Nile in Egypt,
mm-hmm.
and came down with COVID. And all the Egyptians kept saying, eat onions, eat onions.
Well, you know, in terms of the flu, if you're eating a lot of onions, you're not, you know, the breath and the even into your skin is such that you might be staying away from, people might want to stay away from you, and therefore you don't get their germs.
Right. I don't know. I'm not weighing in on this one, because I don't want to get these letters saying, you know, Mark Kulansky told me to eat onions and I got sick anyway.
You know, I did. Just in terms of sickness, though, I actually this morning I thought, you know what, I went to the National Institutes of Health website and I looked on PubMed. There's an article on PubMed on alliums and onions in particular in cancer prevention. And there is some association, according to this piece in PubMed, and also cardiovascular disease.
Yeah, there's a lot of these things, and lowering blood sugar and a lot of things, but When you go to the medical experts on these things, they're not particularly impressed with them.
They say there's an association, but they can't prove it, that it actually yeah. is what is doing it. But keep eating onions anyway. Our guest today is Mark Kurlansky. His book is The Core of an Onion. That's the main title of it. Having some fun talking with him. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau's our producer. Our on-air producer is Clara Neipert. Engineer, Trina LaSousa. I'm Larry Mailer for the Ideas Network. taking a look at the book, The Core of an Onion, on the program today. Mark Kurlansky is the author of the book, and I'm telling you, it's an entertaining and informative read, and I hope you get a chance to take a look at it. Mason in East Troy has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Mason.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having my call.
Sure.
So we have a vegetable farm in East Troy, and we grow onions. We have one variety called Tropea. It's a long red onion, kind of the shape of a champagne glass. It seems to be a lot stronger and spicier than most other varieties, and I was wondering if that's a common thing with longer variety onions, or maybe if you're just breaking more cells as you chop them. I don't know.
No, it's not necessarily. I mean, there are some long, very mild onions that are used in Asia. You know, it's different. Different species are different. And also, you know, where you grow it makes a huge difference. You may be in a very low sulfur place. You get milder onions. Also, hot weather places get stronger onions. So, you know, if you have a, I don't know exactly where you are, but if it's a high sulfur place, you'll have strong onions.
Ah, interesting. Mason, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And we have, I think you write in your book that we have something like 70 varieties of onions grown here in the U.S.?
Yeah. In the 20th century, they learn how to breed onions, which was a difficult thing to do because one of the unusual things about onions is that they're self-pollinating. Both the male and the female are in the same onion. So normally you breed by, a male has a certain characteristic that you breed into the female, but if it's all in the same onion, you can't do that. Until in the 1920s, they located in Davis, in California, what they called an emasculated onion, which was an onion that only had female components and didn't have male. And they were able to breed from that. And they've developed quite a few breeds of onions artificially in that way.
I was amazed when I saw that. So hybrid onions can be traced to a single female-only onion in California.
Correct.
Amazing to me. Matt in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Matt.
Yes, thank you for the topic. I have a debate that I would like Mark to help us with. My wife is a wonderful cook. When she cooks and uses onions, about a day or two later, I notice that our bath towels really stink. So we have this debate on the cause, and I suspect Mark would be able to help us. Her premise is that when cooking, the onions are actually attracted to the moisture in the bath towels. My premise is actually the oil is exuded from our skin after we eat the onions.
I would go with your version. Because, well, it's true that onions are attracted to moisture. It's actually more the quality. People think that the quality of stinging and the quality of the strong smell are the same thing, but they're actually two different chemical compounds. And the one that it's more the stinging than the smell that goes to water. But also, this is really about raw onions. Once they're cooked, they don't exude any of this stuff. I would, if I had my choice, I'd pick your theory about coming from the skin.
I spent a year in Trinidad and Tobago at the University of the West Indies one time, and garlic is big there. And when they talk about garlic, somebody gave me a recipe and I put a clove of garlic in, And they said, well, this doesn't taste right. And what they were really meaning was I should put the whole bulb in.
Right. And Caribbean is very into alliums, and they mix them, which, you know, in some cultures you're not supposed to do. But it's very common in Caribbean cooking to have garlic and onions and leeks all in the same dish.
Yeah. And onions in the U.S., onions, well, we had ramps, but
right.
weren't they brought over maybe by the Europeans, the other varieties?
Well, there are wild ramps.
Yes, we have them in Wisconsin.
What was brought over by the Europeans is what we call onions.
Yeah.
You know, which... they tended to call Spanish onions, although not necessarily. I suppose originally they were from Spain. You know, the Europeans who colonized in the Americas, they wanted everything that they had in Europe. I mean, why didn't they just stay in Europe? I don't know. So they didn't have their kind of onions. And so very early on, you know, in the 1600s, they started bringing onions over.
Well, here in Wisconsin, we often think of the Vidalia onion as being a prime onion. And I was fascinated by reading about how Vidalia onions are hand grown in Georgia.
Yeah, yeah. A hybrid onion, actually, at this point. They originally weren't, but they're a hybrid from Texas, Granos. And in a very specific area, low sulfur area, and very much a hand-grown product. And people in Georgia, you know, they have their favorite onion farmer. You know, they've got one guy whose onions they want.
But they're like hand, everything is by hand. And isn't there a date? Doesn't Georgia have something about a date or location that you can't call it a Vidalia onion unless under these circumstances?
Yes. Yeah, it's a very protected. To call it a Vidalia onion, it has to be planted and harvested within certain dates, and it has to be in certain specific areas.
Yeah.
There are sweet onions, quite similar. The thing about Vidalia is that those people are absolutely brilliant at marketing.
Yes.
But, you know, they grow some sweet onions in Florida and in Texas and, of course, in the Imperial Valley in California, where they grow absolutely everything. And Walla Walla, Washington is known for its sweet onions. And Maui, in a particular slope and a particular volcano, grows sweet onions.
You have some really interesting stories about every one of those places that you mentioned in your book. In Hawaii, on this mountainside, they have to be grown in a very particular part of the mountainside.
That's right. If it gets too high in altitude, the environment isn't right, too low, and it's too sulfurous. It's just a very specific area. It's actually a zip code.
Oh, my goodness. Mike in Rhinelander, we'll go to you next. Hi, Mike.
Hey, good morning. I was very interested to hear about how the hybrid onions were developed. I'm wondering, would the seeds of hybrid onions be still fertile and return a true-to-type onion that would be just like the hybrid parent? Or would it be like apples where they turn into something else?
Well, the thing is, nobody does that anymore. Everybody buys seeds or sets, which are, you know, seeds that have already started growing. Almost no commercial onion grower harvests their own seeds because they're too inconsistent.
Yeah, they're going to be kind of like apples, Mike, I think, in terms of their consistency. So they don't do it. And we don't raise onions from seed typically. We always raise them from sets because of the right length of the growing season. among other things.
Right.
Yeah. Lynn in Waukesha emailed us, and she says, Chef Michael Simon says, when cutting onions, breathe through your mouth.
That actually would work. I don't know if breathing through your mouth works, but it would help you with the onions, yeah, because the nose is a pathway to the eyes.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. You can.
So if you wore glasses and only breathe through your mouth, you'd be in good shape. You probably wouldn't be in good shape, but in onion terms, you would.
Mark Kurlansky, our guest today. His book is The Core of an Onion. We're having a lot of fun talking with you. The subtitle is Peeling the Rarest Common Food, and featuring more than 100 historical recipes. Questions, give a call, 800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address, ideas@wpr.org. There's a lot of things that I found interesting in your book. Interesting thought was that onions have been banned at times in some countries. Talk about that.
Well, you know, even in the U.S., in certain towns, they have statutes banning things like banning eating raw onions in movie theaters or... there's lots of strange ordinances about onions, and these researchers at Texas A&M went and found all these things in different towns. And I called up the towns, and of course, you know, nobody who's running things today even knows that these things are on the record. and it's not clear that they were ever enforced, but somebody had strong feelings about them. Particularly regulating when you can eat raw onions, you know.
Oh, do you eat raw onions? I mean, do you
grab absolutely. I wouldn't dream of eating a cheeseburger without a slice of raw onion.
Yeah, me too. But what about your last comment in the book when it comes to recipes was an onion sandwich where you...
Yeah, well, I have several onion sandwiches.
Yes.
I have an onion sandwich by James Beard, which is wonderful. It's oat bread spread with butter and then sardines and then slices of raw onion. Fantastic sandwich. And then I have a sandwich by Hemingway that he apparently took with him when he went fishing. One of the many reasons why you should think twice about going fishing with him. And it was raw onion and peanut butter. I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, the history of this is so fascinating. And onions are likely the first crop ever grown, I guess, I would think.
They may be. They may be the first cultivated crop, yeah.
And
the thing about onions is that they spread with trade roots because it turns out they grow absolutely everywhere. You know, you can grow them in the Arctic, you can grow them in the tropics and deserts and woodlands, absolutely anywhere.
And I believe you write that they are the second most cultivated vegetable in the world.
Yeah, that's right, after tomatoes. And there's a link between tomatoes and, you may have noticed there's a lot of recipes that call for onions and tomatoes. But the thing is that if you're growing onions and you want to rotate crops in your soil, it works very well to have a soil that grows onions and then grows tomatoes.
Yeah, if it grows onions, well, tomatoes will grow in pretty much anything. I mean, I've got straw bales. I can grow onions in straw bales, straw bale gardening.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure if tomatoes are as universal as onions, but where they grow, they're a good thing to grow with onions.
And in this, our consumption of onions has increased considerably in this country over the years.
Yes, it keeps going up and up. I have no explanation for that, or for most things that Americans do.
I was reading the 70s, we were eating about, I don't know, remember, something like 10 or 15 pounds a year, and now we're eating close to 40 pounds of onions per year, each the average American.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of onions in American cooking, but of course there's lots of other cultures here, and, you know, Latinos use a lot of onions, and Asians use a lot of onions. Indian food. Onions are very central to Indian food. And in fact, onions are, in India, are sort of like what corn is here. It becomes political. If the onion farmers are unhappy, the politicians are in trouble. So they work really hard at trying to keep the onion farmers happy.
Onion prices, as a matter of fact, you wrote about, cost someone, I can't remember who, an election, a major election in India.
Yes, yeah. I happened a few times. And in Modi's last election, which he won by a landslide, he was a little worried because the onions were not going well. but his party had come to power on the ruling party. Had onions had not been doing well under the ruling party, and that's how his party came to power.
Oh, Louise in Dodgeville, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Louise.
Hi. I was wondering if your guest could comment on the connection between native plants like nodding onion and just onions that grow in the wild, and then the cultivars that we eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I can take my answer off the air.
Yeah, you write about that in the book, of course.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, people like Lewis and Clark were introduced to native wild onions by native people, and they're still popular in places where people can find them. This kind of an issue that a lot of these wild onions, you know, that a lot of wild lands have been destroyed, so they can't get wild onions, but they grow in national parks because they're protected. But part of that protection is they don't allow anybody to harvest it. And actually, several native groups have gone to lawsuits to try to get permission to harvest the wild onions in national parks, because these national parks were part of their land where they had always harvested wild onions.
Yeah, because really, really interesting. And, of course, ramps, which we there are a lot of recipes in Wisconsin-based recipes that call for ramps, and ramps are certainly here in the state, and we have a large number of national forest land, tens of thousands of acres.
Yeah, they grow a lot in that sort of Great Lakes area, into Canada also. And also, I believe you have the onion, you know, Chicago was named after a wild onion that grew there. And I believe that onion still grows in Wisconsin. Doesn't grow that much in Chicago anymore.
No, that's another fact, that a factoid. I didn't know that. Oh, man. So how do you select onions? I mean, you've got so many so many chapters in the book that cover you've got soups, sauces, you've got broiled, roasted, and stuffed, you've got caramelized, which is kind of my favorite. Man, if you do it right.
Yeah, everybody's favorite. For one thing, it just smells so good.
Oh, man, it smells so good and tastes so good when it's and I think people make a mistake by not really... They get tired of waiting.
Yeah, that's right. To do good caramelized onions, you have to be patient.
You really have to wait. And as you report in your book, that Vidalias make particularly are good onions for caramelizing.
Yeah, because they have a lot of natural sugar dextrose.
So what's your favorite use of onions in a recipe?
Oh, I mean, I couldn't single out one, but I'll tell you one dish that I really like a lot is encebollado, which is Peruvian. And it is red onions, thinly sliced, marinated in lime juice.
Mm.
It's actually a ceviche, which also comes from Peru. It's ceviche without the fish. And some people think it was like ceviche for poor people. But it's this great condiment. It keeps well. And you can make just a big tub of it and keep it in your refrigerator. And the acid from the lime releases the pigment of the onions and turns the whole thing kind of a bright fuchsia color. So it just livens up the plate, anything you put it with. And also the flavor does, because, you know, with lime and onions are two of the strongest flavors going.
Yeah, that sounds so good to me. Pickled onions, you know, pickled onions have been popular for a long time.
Yeah, the British pickle large onions, which is odd.
Yeah.
The rest of us pickle small onions. And then there's this strange thing of throwing them in a martini. I don't get that. I'm a martini drinker, and I don't want any food in my martini. I don't want an olive in there, and I don't want an onion in there. But onion I don't get, because it doesn't even, you know, it doesn't even show up a lot. You know, at least if you put an olive in, okay, so you got this splash of green or something. I just go with a twist of lemon. It gives you a nice little bit of yellow color, and it doesn't flavor the martini very much.
On that happy note.
By the way,
yes.
Stirred, not shaken. James Bond was completely wrong.
On that happy note, Mark, thank you so much for talking with us today. You have a wonderful book here. I really enjoyed it, and I hope a lot of people get to read it. Thanks, Mark.
Well, thank you very much. Great talking to you.
Mark Kurlansky is the author of the book, The Core of an Onion, and the subtitle, Peeling the Rarest Common Food. And believe me, we didn't really even get into the recipes very much, but you are going to enjoy this book for sure, and you're going to enjoy the recipes. I found some good ones in there, and I think you will as well. And speaking of recipes, what about wild game recipes? Do you have some? Our next guest, Joel Olson, does. Chef Joel Olson, our guest as we talk wild game cooking. Here on the Ideas Network, I'm Larry Mueller.